You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And, of course, being the second Wednesday of the month, we always have our legal team in. We're just a little bit behind it here this morning. We've had a little bit of a problem, but we're getting very close to where we should be. And we have our team in from Hutchison Legal, and today I have Jason. We've had Jason a few times. He's one of the head honchos down there, and also Ryan. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Now, hang on. Something didn't work there.
Huh?
Now, let's start again.
There we go. Good morning, and good morning to all the listeners as well.
Good morning, everyone. Nice to be here with you as well.
Righto. Now, we sent you over a couple of questions last time.
They're always so difficult too.
Well, one of them in particular, we want to know, well, we'll take the second one first, and that was all about organ donation.
Yes.
Somebody has asked the question, they've put it in their will that they want to donate their organs.
Yes.
But they believe that one or two of the children may not be quite so keen, and they just want to know what the process is. And can it be overridden by the people around? Because obviously this person's not going to be around when it's time to happen. So what's the score?
That's exactly right. Look, the short answer is that an organ donation request can be overridden if the family say that, you know, mum or dad had changed their mind, they told us, or they're very strongly opposed. In effect, the authorities aren't going to have a big fight usually. However, even more than that, it's important if you do want to donate your organs or your body to science or whatever the case may be, you need to do more than just include that in your will, because it's a practical reality. Often a will isn't read until some weeks even after the death, by which time it's far too late.
That's been brought up once before. I know the funeral director that we had in once, Bill Matthews, he was saying that sometimes people leave things that they want to happen at their funeral, and he said sometimes a funeral, you know, someone wants to be buried in it, and the family say, "No, just cremate them," and then they find out when they read the will what should have happened.
Exactly right. There is an organ donor register which you can register yourself on, and I think it's actually linked to your driver licence, right, so that if something happened to you, the police or the first responders attending the scene would be able to put your name in and know that you intend to have your organs donated, right, because obviously anything that needs to happen within hours after death. That's the best advice. Make sure you're on the organ donor register. Make sure you've had the discussions with the family. Tell them really clearly that this is what you're doing and that this is what you want, so there are no surprises at that time. Yep. And hopefully everyone will agree and do what you want.
All right, well, let me play the devil advocate.
Yes.
Dad's, because I can talk about my father because he's long gone. Dad puts in his will and he tells us all that I want to donate. I got a sister. We get together and we say, nah, not going to let it happen. Can we override it, which I think you said you could? What would be the process? Would we have to go to court and argue the case, or when we went to the funeral director, could we just say, nah, this is what's going to happen. You just bury them or cremate them.
Yeah, look, it would be in the first hours after the death.
Yep.
And if it would probably depend slightly on the circumstances where you died,
yep,
where the deceased had died. But it would be either to the funeral directors, to the hospital staff, in some circumstances even to the coroner's court if necessary, to make those objections known.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more. We've got another one. We're going to talk about the responsible serving of alcohol. Ave 2, whether you work in a pub or a club or,
yes,
or a wine bar. And the other thing too, if you're in part of a community group, whether they're the same rules for both. And I know there's pretty hefty fines for some of these, so let's get it right.
Didn't mean it when I said I didn't love you so. I should. tight, I never should have let you go. I didn't know nothing, I was stupid, I was foolish, I was lying to myself. I couldn't have fathomed I would ever be without your love. Never imagined I'd be sitting here beside myself. Cause I didn't know you, cause I didn't know me, but I thought I knew everything. I never and kiss your lips, cause I don't have a choice. Oh, what I wouldn't get to have you lying by my side right here. Cause baby, when you left, I lost a part of me. It's still so hard to believe. Come back, baby, please. Cause
we belong together.
Who else am I gonna leave? No, when times get rough, who's gonna talk to me on the phone till the sun comes up? Who's gonna take your place? On the radio, sing to me.
If you think you're the one,
wait a minute, this is too deep.
Too deep.
I gotta change the station, so I turn the dial, trying to catch a break. And then I hear baby face. I only think of you, and it's breaking my heart. I'm trying to keep it together, but I'm falling apart. I'm feeling all out of my element, throwing things, crying, trying to figure out where the hell I went wrong. And it's so you didn't even have a word. I'm feeling inside. I need you back in my life, baby. When you left, I lost a part of me. And it's still so hard to believe. Come back, baby, please. Cause
we belong together.
Who else am I gonna leave? No one times you're out. Who's gonna talk to me on the phone till the sun comes up? Who's gonna take your place? There ain't nobody better.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and I have with me the boys, Jason and Ryan from Hutchison Legal. Now, we've had one question that was rung in before the show last time about this responsible serving of alcohol, what the responsibilities are and what people have to have them, you know. And then after the people had left, someone else rang up and said, well, I'm involved with a community group and I'd like to know, are there the same rules for a community group as what they are for a pub or a club or whatever? So, guys, if we can have a bit of a talk about that.
These are great questions, Alan, great questions. And the requirements
to... They've got a good audience.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. They're listening, they're engaged and they're thinking. What more could you ask?
Yep.
The requirements for responsible serving of alcohol training and qualifications and so forth will all depend largely upon the licensing requirements of the particular venue.
Right.
And so basically, any time you've got a venue where they're selling, offering or serving liquor, and whether it's a general or on-premises or late-night packaged liquor licenses, they all have different requirements. And
right.
So the starting point is to figure out what's the license requirement,
right,
and then to look at what are the RSA requirements that flow.
Yeah, so there's a few different ways to look at it. So the first thing is looking at what's the responsibility of the person, the employee selling the alcohol.
Yep.
And then also looking at the responsibility of the business or the manager. And then following on from your question, whether that might extend to when the person who has the alcohol leaves the business or leaves the restaurant or cafe, is the business, does it have any duty to care for that person if they do end up having an accident?
Well, that's a good point, because that can happen, can't it?
It certainly can.
Yep.
Yeah, so going back to towards just in general the responsibility of someone who is serving alcohol in a bar or a restaurant, they do have to have what's called the responsible serving of alcohol certificate. So that's a program that and certificate that they have to have done before they can then start serving the alcohol. Otherwise, if you haven't done that, the business or even that person can be liable for fines, and it can affect the business. In terms of the other general responsibilities, if you are serving alcohol, you're not meant to serve alcohol to someone that is drunk, that has there's visible signs that they've been violent, disorderly, behaving indecently. You can't supply them with alcohol, otherwise you can be fined up to even $19,000. And you're also not meant to serve alcohol to someone under 18 years of age. There's quite a few different things to look out for, and it's important for businesses to be aware of the different requirements and to educate the employees as well when they are serving the alcohol. And it's often quite difficult to figure out, when you are serving the alcohol, is this person, what's the level of alcohol that they've had? But it is quite important to, just be aware of the different signs, the slurring of speech, perhaps, being very loud, not being able to walk properly. There's a lot of different things you can look out for and be aware of as well.
And you've got to be aware that all this is based on a regular glass, isn't it? Whereas when you start getting to wines, like you might be able to have a full glass of beer and have three of those an hour, but once you get into wine, two of those could knock you past the over. It is because based on, from what I understand, the level of alcohol that's in the drink.
Yes, yep. That's what's impairing or affecting the individual. That's exactly right. And so these trainings are so critically important. There's obligations on the employer to make sure the staff are trained. There are obligations on the employees directly. There are obligations...
Because there are fines for the employee too, aren't
absolutely.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And as Ryan said, some of these fines can be high. There are even requirements around the posting of signage in the area and making water available to drink. These are all some of the requirements which need to be taken into account. Yep. So for a large organisation, a restaurant, a winery, a bar, a club, they're well funded. They've got the funds to make sure that this is all done properly.
Yep. What about, so we start now talking about community groups?
Exactly right. And, when you're talking about the footy club, the bowling club, the local RSL, and, people want to help out, and Joe is sick today, so Bruce is going to jump behind the bar and give him a hand. These are all issues for a local organisation that they really need to take into account very, very carefully, or they can find themselves in big trouble.
All right. So in a community group, does everybody have to have an RSA, or the person who's managing on the night just have the RSA?
You need to make sure that the management have the appropriate training and qualification. Yep. You need to make sure the people actually serving alcohol have the appropriate training and qualification.
So they'd still have to have that, even though the manager might have the RSA, so should the person selling.
That's correct. Anyone who's behind a bar needs to have that training. That's correct.
Let me just throw another thing at you, which is, at what point is it selling? So if a person goes to the fridge and pulls out a can and puts it on the bar, is that selling, or is it, I know I'm getting technical here, but I've been asked this, or is it, like if I went along and I didn't have an RSA and I just put the beer on the can and said to Fred Nurk, who's got one, hey, you sell that, you take the money because it's alcohol, I can't do it.
Yes.
Is that allowable? Do you need the RSA for that, or is that allowable not to have an RSA?
Yeah, so the language of the licensing authority is it's not just about selling alcohol, it's selling, offering and serving.
Right.
And so if an activity could fall into any of those categories, then you'll fall within the requirements of the license.
I don't want to be technical, but that still doesn't really answer it. Is it serving if you give them a can or a bottle and you don't take the top off it? You've only handed them a commodity. Is it different if you take the top off? Because then you still haven't poured it.
Yep.
And if you don't take the money, is that selling? Because, someone can find themselves in a bit of trouble here.
They can. The distinction between whether you're serving an open beverage, yep, or just providing a closed container, that will be relevant to the license of the venue, whether they're allowed to serve. So, you know, it makes the distinction between, right, somewhere where drinks being served with a meal, or, yep, somewhere where it's actually really the sale of liquor.
Yep.
So that's a distinction there. But when you've got any staff who are involved in that process, they should be looking, and in most license requirements, they will need to have that RSA training.
They do have the RSA training.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
And also, what we're really saying is that you wouldn't want to rely on this idea of the point of sale, would you? You wouldn't want to say to someone, I'll put that there, but you take the money because you've got the RSA.
No, that's exactly right, because you're still part of that process of making alcohol available. And if you think about the framework, like, the goal of this whole regime is to ensure that people are being looked after. And so a technical distinction like that isn't necessarily going to make sure that Bob hasn't had too much to drink tonight. These responsibilities extend beyond just complying with the responsible service of alcohol requirements. You know, it's about the duty of care that's owed to patrons or owed to the public in general. You know, there have been cases. There was one case in South Australia where a fellow had 22 drinks at the local hotel that night, and then he was sold a six pack of rum and he headed off. And unfortunately, he was killed in an accident. You know, it's not just about ticking the box and saying, well, we followed the rules. It's also about making sure that people, the public and the broader public, are okay.
All right, so let me throw another one at you. I know I'm throwing a few
here. That's what we're here for.
And putting you right on the spot. All right, so we'll say it's like a footy club. And,
yes.
Joe Blow has had we've kept serving him and he's really bit. But we've said to him, well, look, leave your car here. We don't want you taking that car home. So we think we've done the right thing. We've taken his keys off him. He walks out across the road, doesn't see the bus coming, splat.
Yeah.
So now, can the person be technically, or not technically, can they be held responsible because they, in fact, supplied the person with a grog, even though they took his keys from him? Where does the licensee and the person who sold the grog to him, where do they stand?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, and that's one that's...
That's what we're here to do. Yeah. That's good questions, not to make it easy.
But, yeah, there was a very similar case that went to the High Court in Australia, where there was an incident where there was a woman who went to a local hotel, and then she had a lot of drinks throughout the day. The hotel were aware that she was drinking too much, and they wanted to stop serving her alcohol as well. And then they offered to, they said that they would look after her. They tried to get her a taxi to leave as well. And then she was struck by a car as she was leaving. Yeah. So in that situation, you would think, you know, the hotel might have some sort of liability. They've told her they were going to look after her, and then she's gone and, had an accident.
So they go to the High Court?
Went to the High Court. And what the High Court said was, generally, there's not a duty of care to take care of someone that's kind of caused their own intoxication. So in the case, you know, she was the one who kept drinking. She was well over the limit.
Yep.
But it can extend. So a duty of care to someone who has been served by a hotel or pub, it can extend in exceptional circumstances where there might be liability if, you know, there's someone who's who goes to the club or hotel and they're already intellectually impaired, and drinking and causing them to be even more intoxicated makes them unable to look after themselves. But if it's someone who's of sound mind and they've just had a lot to drink and they're the ones contributing and wanting to be more and more intoxicated, yep. In most cases, and it does depend on the circumstances, but in most cases there won't be that duty of care to prevent any harm that is caused.
Because then could they argue, though, that they're drunk that much, that they didn't have the ability to make a reasoned decision as well?
Yeah, that's right. But I think in most cases, such as in the example that you're using, a lot of it is the person wanting to be self-intoxicated and they're the ones going out of their way to try and drink more. But it's really important for local clubs, hotels, pubs, people that are working there to try and identify it right away and to make sure they do say things like, you know, we can't serve you anymore, we need to get you home. But you want to be careful of the way you communicate it as well. You don't want to say, you know, we're going to look after you, because then you're already communicating that you're going to care for them. That's right. Yeah. Yep. So it's very tricky, this area, to navigate.
Yep.
And it's probably worth noting as well that while the High Court in that decision said that the rugby club wasn't responsible for her death, that's not to say that the serving of alcohol would have been consistent with our responsible service of alcohol requirements.
Right.
So they're really two separate questions issues. As well.
All right, we'll take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Brought horizon as a walk from your embrace. What I feel is nothing but the taste of you. I get buried in your mouth. Falling, I don't care if I can't climb out. Look at the moon, but I see only you. I'm days away, I'm a man in a caravan by the sea. Waving at the old folks, waving at me. I'll fall for you. When I get on and shake my pride, I'll fall on you. We can do better than I am tonight. I'll be strong and stressed than I am tonight. Edging out, see the drop. I take a new step, will you follow or stop? I look back from the ocean beneath to your eyes. To your eyes.
On the horizon as I walk from your embrace. What I feel is nothing but the taste of you. I get buried in your mouth.
Are we in it together now? I'll fall for you. Got any doubt, I'll cut them out. I feel the clubs around me, living for two. I'll fall for you. When I get on and shake my pride, I'll fall on you. We can do better than I am tonight for you.
Take my pride, I'll call on you. We can do better than I am tonight. Be strong.
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, I should mention, if there is something you want to know about the law, we can't talk about cases, as we've often said, because they take a lot of time to sit down and discuss them. But if you want to know something about the law, if you give us a quick ring on 59-615-9915, 59-615-9915. I often get people ring up at about 2 o'clock saying, oh, by the way, I meant to ask this or that. So do it in the next 10 minutes. If not, they'll be back. We'll have people from Hutchison Legal here next month, the second Wednesday of the month. info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. That's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. And we'll pose the questions. We've already got a question for next month, which will put the cat among the pigeons, I think. But anyway, Jason, we've been talking about pubs and clubs. What about, I think Christmas time's coming up.
It is.
The office party. Now, there's not going to be an RSA people among some of those if they're holding it in the office.
Usually, yeah.
So what happens here?
That's right. So, look, as a general proposition, and I say it's general because it depends on the circumstances. That's right. But for most employers, if they do their homework, they'll find that there's no legal issue with them having a bottle of wine at a end-of-year function or something like that.
Right.
If that's the case, then there wouldn't be the attendant RSA requirements that come with a licence. However, that's only general because it may depend upon the venue where you're having your event.
Whether it's a licensed venue or not.
Correct, that's right. Or it might depend upon whether you have other people outside your organisation coming. If you're inviting some customers or some clients and suppliers, that may make it an event which is open to the public, which may change the licensing requirement as well. So a little bit of homework and thinking needs to be done along those lines.
Yep.
One that an employer should think about if they're having an event, even just at the office or in the factory or at their place of work, just think about whether that interferes with their insurance obligations. And if someone trips and falls, is it still going to be covered under the terms of their insurance? Something that's worth thinking about as well.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, so there's a few issues there that can make it a little bit prickly. Obviously, then there are the more obvious ones where excess drinking can result in inappropriate behaviour and sexual harassment claims. And so, look, it's not uncommon that employers will make sure that they host their events at a third-party venue, at a restaurant, at a club, where any alcohol is provided by that venue and they take that responsibility. Look, there are many employers which are just avoiding the issue entirely, and during the break you mentioned some that you've seen. Yep. Where
Our company made a half-day holiday.
That's right.
And so we could, it wasn't on there. All right, so what about, while we're talking about responsible servicing of alcohol, but I'm not talking about the actual certificate.
Mm.
All right, so you have a few of your friends over Saturday night, Joe Blow against Molly DeMunk.
Yeah.
What responsibility do I as a homeowner have for that person?
Yes, so there's no special duty to make sure that alcohol's served responsibility in a home. None of the legislation goes that far. But the general principles would still apply. And look, if someone had too much to drink at a birthday party, particularly if it was a minor or someone who you should have been looking out for, that's right. And if they're hurt, you can be sure that the lawyers will be asking questions, if nothing else.
What a surprise. What a surprise.
Look, probably the good advice is exercise some common sense in all these circumstances. Exercise caution and restraint if that's appropriate, and do your best to avoid those circumstances.
All right, we need to take one more quick break, and then we want to come back and we want to talk about wills.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present and emerging.
Yarra more. I was bored listening to the same old chords. You would complain that I was never around. And we shouldn't hope. No, we shouldn't hope. If love is so easy, then why am I stuck? If life is so smooth, why can't I get enough? Oh, I'm still lost and running. Get enough. No, I'm still lost and running. I can't get enough. City streets, I'm out of luck. The cobblestones are dark and wet. There's no one I trust. And it comes around. Yeah, it comes around. It's just so easy. Say, where have you gone? I'm looking for somewhere that I can lay down my arms. Oh, I'm still lost and running. I can't get enough. No, I'm still lost. I can't get enough. No, I'm still lost and running. Somewhere I lay down my arms. Oh, I'm still lost and running. I can't get enough. Oh, oh, oh.
Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice.
Well, hello, Grant, if you're listening. Look, it's just a quick reminder. At 1 o'clock, we've got Lisa from Meeson Health coming in to talk to us, and then at 2 o'clock, we've got Choice Tunes. We've got someone that a few of you will know, but you won't know much about their background, and we'll be playing their 8 songs that they've picked to tell us all about their lives. But anyway, we were talking to Hutchison Legal, both Jason and Ryan. Now, personal effects, when a person dies, often the money is left to certain people, but often the little knick-knacks, and you get one or two people that want to argue. So
yeah.
Where does the law stay with that?
Yeah, look, unfortunately that can be the case, and people can spend sometimes as much energy and time and even money fighting about the personal effects as they did about everything else put together.
Yep.
And look, the law will depend upon what the will says. And so sometimes a will is silent, sometimes an executor will have a discretion.
Often the will's not going to mention every little nickname.
Correct.
Like mum's wedding ring and
exactly.
Know, that sort of stuff.
That's right. So the rule is that the benefit should pass to the beneficiaries, but the issue can be if the one child thinks that mum's ancient crockery is worth thousands of dollars and someone else says, I asked around at the op shop, they said it doesn't sell at all. They don't want it. That's right. And that's the reality for many families. Yep. Look, some of these issues can go to court. Even in family law, this can be an issue.
Yeah, in family law, you know, after you separate or if you have divorce, most people tend to fight over the big property, you know, the house, but it also extends to who gets the jewellery, who gets the furniture.
And, they tell me a lot about pets now too.
Yeah, pets as well. So generally, the general principle is pets are treated as property. So you can't just agree on, you know, say, you know, Jason gets the dog for 3 days a week, I get the dog for 4 days a week. Not that we live together. Shit like that.
I can start a rumour.
But any agreement that you make about the time that the pet spends, it's not binding because it's treated as property. So only one person can actually have ownership of the pet. Yeah, so a lot of people aren't too aware of that. And even if you have a sentimental attachment, the court might take that into consideration. But ultimately, only one person ends up with the dog. So, in terms of other things, you know, I've dealt a lot with wine as well, dividing up who gets the wine that you've been storing in the cellar for.
Well, that could be worth a lot of money.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. I've had a few cases where the wine's been quite valuable, and they haven't agreed on who gets to keep what.
So what generally happens then? Does the court have to decide? Or?
So this one was out of court. You can get the wine valued and you can list it for an auction. And then you can divide up the proceeds from the sale. But another way to do it is you might do, you know, pick for pick. I get the 1995 bottle, you get the 2001 bottle. Not that it's as valuable, but that's another way to resolve it. But there's lots of different things that, you might not have thought about dividing. And if you don't have a working relationship with the person you separated with, then it might be things that you end up fighting over when you're trying to divide up not just the big house but also all the things that come with it.
Yeah, because you tend to think of the house and the cars and all that sort of stuff, don't you? And the money in the bank, but not necessarily mum's jewellery or bits and pieces like that.
That's right. Yeah. My standard advice to anyone who's doing estate planning or looking at a dispute or in a situation where people might be fighting over those belongings is to give it some thought, get advice if necessary. Things can trap people. For example, motor cars are defined as chattels in a will situation. So even if you say, I'll just leave all my personal chattels to someone or so-and-so, that could include the car, which might be an unintended gift that you weren't quite thinking about. Things like that. Get some advice. Plan ahead. Do things to take the contention out of the issue.
And it's better, I guess, to do all that when things are good rather than when you're separating and at each other's throat.
That's exactly right.
All right. I've got to take one more quick break and then we've got something for you to go away and come back next month for us.
Can't wait.
Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Righto. We're ready to ask the question for next time to come back. So we've had a couple of phone calls, and I'll tie them all in together. Some guy's had his car stolen.
Right.
And it's a normal car, but it's souped up, and it's his car. So now when he goes to look at his insurance policy, it says they don't pay it on the car for 10 days.
Right.
Right, first thing. So first thing is he goes away, probably a little bit foolish. He should have waited, and he goes and buys another car. So after about 6 days, they contact him and they say, we've now found the car.
Oh.
So what's his obligation? Does he have to take the car back? Not so much what's in his policy, but what's the law on that sort of situation?
Yeah.
Now, the other situation, well, part of this whole deal is, right, this car gets found, we'll say after 5 days.
Yes.
If it had been involved in a robbery and been burnt, or it had been smashed, as we see happens on some of these where they're stolen, then the insurance company's going to write it off.
Yep.
Pardon me, it's good for cough. Right, so he gets his car back, we'll say, but he thinks it's been thrashed.
Yep.
So he thinks, now if I take this car back and the motor blows up, I can be up for a couple of $1,000s really quick, smart. $3,000 or $4,000 easy, because this has got a special motor in.
Yeah.
And he wants to know, then if I take it back and then it blows up, then that's my responsibility.
Yeah.
Can he refuse to take that car back? What's the legal situation?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Yeah, well, the policy doesn't say whether you have to take it back. It just says that the insurance company have got 10 days. No, they don't even say they've got 10 days to find. I think the policy is something about 10 days before they'll pay out.
Right.
So the assumption is if it's found under 10 days, you take the car back. Except, as I say, if it's been in an accident or if it's been burnt, well, that's the end of that.
Yeah.
But his point is he might not want that car back.
Yes, yes. I could certainly understand him not wanting it back.
Well, and in his instance, probably a little bit foolishly, and I don't have a go at our listener for that, he's gone and bought another car, and that was based on the fact that he would get the money coming back from the first car.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a financial problem. Probably the law's not going to help him in that way, because they're going to say, well, you should have waited the 10 days. You did know it was a 10-day. But it's more than the case of, is he obligated to take the car back?
Mm.
And then what could the insurance company do?
Yeah. And so you got some questions there of contract law and insurance law, and everyone will have to tune in next month to hear the wonderful answer that I'm sure one of my colleagues will give.
Which you're walking away from.
It probably won't surprise the listeners to know that that whole area of insurance law is very well developed. Insurance companies do not pay out if they do not have to, as a general proposition. Yep. And so questions of interpreting policies and questions of who's liable and what are the rights, what are the obligations, these are things which the courts have been asked to address many, many times.
Okay.
And so some areas of law, there hasn't been a lot of dispute in litigation. Insurance law is not one of those areas.
Well, I mean, I guess in fairness, like, we can sit here and slag off at the insurance companies if we want to, but I guess Their job is to cover you with insurance.
Yes.
But nobody says that they're going to pay out just because they're nice guys.
No, correct. And obviously, if they did, everyone else's premiums go up. So there's no magical pot of money sitting there that's available. It is. We're all paying for it
all private companies.
Yes.
It's not like there's government behind them saying, oh, well, you know, if you pay out too much this year, well, we'll support you.
That's correct.
That's not going to happen at all.
No, exactly right.
So we always get some good questions from this. And again, you know, if you've got a question, too late to ring now, but send us an email at info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. We'll put it to the guys or ladies who come in from Hutchison Legal next time. Guys, we've got about a minute Have you got anything that you want to say before we go?
Look, obviously we've got state elections coming up.
Oh, don't go there.
My perspective as a lawyer is that our democracy is critically important. It's important that we have the rule of law, and globally around the world we're seeing that the rule of law is diminishing in many, many places. Yep. And so I would just encourage everyone to not be annoyed that we have an election, but to embrace it and participate. It's a vital part of our civic life.
You don't have to enjoy all the stuff coming in the letterbox, do you?
You don't. You don't.
Guys, it's been fabulous to have you in again. Ryan, I think this is the first time we've had Ryan, isn't it?
Yeah, first time for me.
Well, there you go. So if he survives that, Grant, use your... They've got a job for life, isn't that the case?
That's correct. This is part of our recruitment process.
And Jason, it's great to have you again.
Thank you, Alan.
We look forward to having people back in from Hutchison Legal on the second Wednesday of November.
That's right. November. We'll look forward to it.
So we've probably only got twice more.
That's right. We'll keep
you working right through the December.
Correct.
All right, guys, thanks very much for your attendance, and we look forward to seeing someone next month.